Have you ever felt that sinking feeling when you thought you had all your bases covered, but then you find out there's a loophole you missed?
Oh, yeah.
Today, we're diving into a case that'll make every lawyer double-check their contracts.
Yeah, definitely.
Johnson v. Earnhardt's, Gilbert Dodge.
That's a good one.
It's a used car sale gone wrong.
Right.
But the legal twists and turns go far beyond a simple lemon law case.
Absolutely.
What makes this case so interesting?
Well, it's how it throws a wrench into the usual as-is disclaimer
Oh,
scenario.
really?
Yeah, so you see, Brenda Johnson bought a used Kia Sportage back in 2000 from Earnhardt's Gilbert Dodge in Arizona.
Okay.
The sales agreement had the standard as-is clause,
Right.
but Johnson also paid extra for a Daimler Chrysler service contract.
She had that extra layer of protection, right?
You'd think so, right?
Yeah.
But when the car started having problems,
No.
Earnhardt's tried to invoke that as-is clause to avoid responsibility.
Oh, wow.
And this set off a chain reaction of legal battle,
Oh, geez.
with lower courts disagreeing on how to interpret the situation.
Wow.
Ultimately, the case landed in the lap of the Arizona Supreme Court.
Okay, so we've got a classic contract dispute with a service contract twist. What
Exactly.
makes this case so complex?
Well, it all boils down to the interplay of state and federal laws. You've
Gosh.
got the UCC,
Uh-huh.
which sets the baseline for sales contracts in most states.
Right.
Arizona law even allows used car dealers to limit those implied warranties under certain conditions.
Interesting.
Then you have the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, a federal law that specifically addresses warranties. And here's where it gets tricky. Magnuson-Moss distinguishes between a written warranty included in the price and a service contract that's purchased separately.
So how did the Arizona Supreme Court untangle this legal web to
Right.
decide with the dealer or the buyer?
Well, neither actually. They
All
took a
right.
deep dive into the contract documents
Okay.
and noticed some crucial ambiguities.
Oh, really?
One key question was Earnhardt's role. Were they just facilitating the Daimler Chrysler service contract
Right.
or acting as a direct warrantor themselves?
Interesting.
That ambiguity allowed the court to consider what's called parole evidence.
I see.
Basically, statements made during the sale that might clarify the party's intentions.
Wait, so even with a written contract, what's said during the deal can still matter in court?
Absolutely.
Wow.
That's a big takeaway for anyone drafting or reviewing contracts.
Absolutely.
It emphasizes the importance of clear communication throughout the transaction.
Right.
Don't just rely on the fine print. Be mindful of what's being said
Yeah.
and consider documenting important conversations.
That's a good point. Sometimes those side conversations can come back to bite you later.
You got it.
So where did the parole evidence lead the court in this case?
Good question.
Did it help Johnson?
Well, it certainly added a new layer of complexity.
Okay.
Remember that separate payment Johnson made for the service contract?
Yes.
Well, the court zeroed in on that $12,235 and decided it meant the service contract wasn't a written warranty as defined by Magnuson-Moss.
Oh, wow.
That potentially allowed the dealer to enforce that 15-day, 500-mile limit on the implied warranty.
So the separate payment actually worked against Johnson?
It
That's
did.
a real head scratcher.
It is.
Yeah.
And it shows how seemingly minor details can have significant legal consequences.
Definitely.
The Arizona Supreme Court didn't completely side with either party.
Okay.
They sent the case back to a lower court to hash out those factual inconsistencies about the service contract and Earnhardt's role.
So we're left hanging a bit. No clear winner or loser.
Right.
But what are some key takeaways lawyers should glean from this case?
Good question.
What should we be paying attention to when dealing with similar situations?
Well, one of the biggest lessons here is that clarity reigns supreme in contract drafting.
Right.
Avoid ambiguity like the plague, especially when it comes to disclaimers and warranties.
Okay.
This case also serves as a reminder that service contracts can add complexity to the equation,
Yeah.
and it's crucial to understand how they intersect with both state and federal laws.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it's not enough to just slap an as-is disclaimer on a contract and call it a day.
Right.
You've got to carefully consider the entire context of the transaction,
Exactly.
including any verbal promises or side agreements.
Absolutely. Exactly. And this case highlights another crucial concept in contract law,
Good.
the idea of mutual assent.
Oh, right. Mutual assent.
Yeah. For a contract to be enforceable, both parties need to genuinely agree to its terms.
Ah, so it's not just about signing on the dotted line.
Right.
There has to be a meeting of the minds, so to speak.
Precisely. And in Johnson v. Earnhardt's, the court wasn't convinced there was true mutual assent regarding the limitations on that implied warranty, those conflicting
Sure.
documents,
Right.
and the possibility of verbal assurances from the dealership
Wow.
muddied the waters.
Okay.
Did Johnson fully understand what she was agreeing to?
Right.
That's the question the court grappled with.
So even if a contract looks airtight on paper, there's still room for interpretation.
Exactly.
Based on the surrounding circumstances and what was actually communicated between the parties.
Right. It's not always a black and white situation.
Yeah.
And this case is a perfect example of how those gray areas can lead to lengthy legal battles.
It's like those optical illusions where you can see two different images depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
Except in this case, the stakes are a lot higher than just a fun brain teaser.
I like that analogy.
Thanks.
And it brings up another interesting point, the idea of objective intent.
Oh, okay.
In contract law, courts often focus on what a reasonable person would understand from the party's words and actions rather than their subjective or hidden intentions.
So it's not just about what someone was thinking in their head.
Right.
It's about what they actually conveyed to the other party.
Exactly. And in Johnson v. Earnhardt's, the court recognized that relying solely on the written contract wouldn't give a complete picture of the party's intent, especially given that ambiguity surrounding the service contract.
This case is a goldmine of legal lessons.
Oh, yeah.
Any other nuggets of wisdom you think our listeners should take away, especially if they find themselves wading through similar contract disputes?
Well, besides the importance of clarity we already discussed, I'd say this case underscores the power of mutual assent.
Okay.
Ensure both parties clearly understand and agree to the terms. Document key conversations.
Right.
And address any potential ambiguities head on.
Yeah, good advice.
Don't just assume everyone's on the same page.
It's almost like being a legal therapist, making sure everyone's communication is healthy and aligned before moving forward with the contract.
I'd say that's a pretty accurate description.
Yeah.
And for those on the buyer side,
yeah.
It's crucial to read contracts carefully, ask questions,
right.
And get clarification on anything that seems unclear.
Good point.
Don't be afraid to push back or seek legal advice before signing on the dotted line.
This case is a great reminder that contracts aren't just about legalese and technicalities.
Right.
They're about real people, real transactions, and ensuring those transactions are fair and transparent.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Now, before we wrap up, there's one more aspect of this case I'd like to touch on.
Okay.
The role of summary judgment.
Ah, yes. Summary judgment.
Right.
That legal maneuver that can sometimes make or break a case.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you break it down for our listeners who might not be familiar with the ins and outs of civil procedure?
Sure. Summary judgment is a way for a court to decide a case without a full-blown trial.
Oh.
It's a tool that allows a party to say, look, there's no genuine dispute about the key facts of this case.
Right.
So we can resolve it based solely on the law.
So if everyone agrees on the basic facts, the judge can make a ruling without having to go through the time and expense of a trial.
Yeah.
Sounds efficient.
It can be, but it's not always applicable. And in Johnson v. Earnhardt's, the Supreme Court ultimately decided that summary judgment wasn't appropriate in this particular situation.
Why not? Wasn't the contract pretty clear-cut?
Well, remember all those lingering questions about the verbal assurances?
Yeah.
The service contract
right.
And Earnhardt's exact role?
Uh-huh.
Those unresolved factual issues meant there were still genuine disputes that needed to be sorted out.
Oh, I see.
And that's why the Supreme Court sent the case back down to the lower court for further proceedings.
So those factual disputes, even if they seem minor, can have a big impact on whether a case can be resolved through summary judgment.
Absolutely. And it's a good reminder for lawyers on both sides of the equation.
Okay.
Those seeking summary judgment need to present a rock-solid case that there are no genuine factual disputes.
Right.
While those opposing it need to highlight any ambiguities or inconsistencies that might require a full trial to resolve.
It's a delicate dance, isn't it?
It is.
Trying to anticipate the other side's arguments and build a case that can withstand those procedural challenges?
It certainly is, and it highlights the strategic thinking that's often required in litigation.
Now, we've talked a lot about the UCC.
Yeah.
But let's zoom in on the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act.
Okay.
It seems to play a pivotal role in this case.
Yes.
But I think a lot of people, even those in the legal field, might not be fully aware of its nuances.
Right.
Can you give us a crash course?
Of course, Magnuson-Moss is all about protecting consumers when it comes to warranties.
Okay.
As we mentioned earlier, it distinguishes between written warranties and service contracts.
Right.
A written warranty is essentially a guarantee from the manufacturer or seller that a product will work as expected for a certain period.
Okay.
It's baked into the purchase price.
So if your new laptop suddenly starts glitching within the warranty period, the manufacturer is obligated to fix it or give you a new one, right?
Exactly. And Magnuson Moss sets out specific requirements for how those written warranties must be presented,
yeah,
ensuring that consumers know their rights and remedies.
Okay.
It's all about transparency.
Makes sense. So what about service contracts?
Okay.
I feel like those are often presented as an extra layer of protection.
Yeah.
But I'm not always sure what they actually cover.
A service contract, sometimes called an extended warranty, is essentially an insurance policy for your product.
Oh, okay.
It's a separate agreement, often sold for an additional cost, that provides coverage beyond the manufacturer's original warranty.
So if you're worried about accidental damage or repairs after the manufacturer's warranty expires, you might opt for a service contract.
Precisely. And while service contracts can offer peace of mind, it's crucial to understand what's covered and what's not.
Right.
They're not always a necessary purchase.
Yep.
And sometimes the manufacturer's warranty is sufficient.
And in the case of Johnson V. Earnhardt's, that separate payment for the Daimler Chrysler service contract became a crucial factor.
Right.
Because it meant the contract fell outside the definition of a written warranty, according to Magnuson Moss.
You got it. And that distinction had big legal implications, potentially allowing the dealer to enforce the limitation on that implied warranty.
Okay.
It just goes to show how seemingly small details can have a huge impact on the outcome of a case.
It's a reminder that lawyers need to be detail-oriented detectives.
For sure.
Always on the lookout for those subtle clues that can shift the legal landscape.
Exactly.
Now, this case was decided back in 2006. How has the legal landscape surrounding warranties changed since then? Especially with the rise of e-commerce and digital products.
That's a great question. The world of commerce has undergone a major transformation in recent years.
Yeah, it has.
And the law has had to adapt.
Right.
Courts are now grappling with issues like software warranties, online contracts,
yeah,
and the enforceability of those click-wrap agreements we all encounter on a daily basis.
Yes, those endless terms and conditions we scroll through without reading before clicking. I agree.
Right.
Are those click-wrap agreements even legally binding?
That's a question that has kept lawyers busy.
Uh-huh, I bet.
Generally speaking, courts have upheld their enforceability as long as they meet certain requirements, like being clearly presented and giving users a reasonable opportunity to review the terms.
Right.
But it's not always a clear-cut issue.
Yeah.
There's debate about whether clicking a button truly equals informed consent.
It seems like finding that balance between protecting consumers and upholding the sanctity of contracts in the digital age is a constant challenge.
It definitely is. And as technology keeps evolving,
right,
we can expect to see even more legal challenges and creative solutions emerge.
This case is a fantastic springboard for discussing the broader implications of contract law in our increasingly digital world.
I agree.
It's fascinating to see how these age-old legal principles are being applied to new and rapidly evolving technologies.
I agree. And it's a reminder that the law is a living, breathing thing, always adapting to the changing needs of society.
It's amazing to think how a used car purchase from 2000 can still offer so much insight into the ever-evolving world of contract law.
It really does. It speaks to the enduring relevance of these core legal principles: offer, acceptance, consideration, mutual assent,
right,
the foundational building blocks of any agreement.
We've covered so much ground in this deep dive into Johnson V. Earnhardt's Gilbert Dodge.
We have.
We've explored the intricacies of implied warranties, the impact of service contracts, and how seemingly minor details can have major legal consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've seen how courts grapple with interpreting contracts.
Yeah.
Considering not just the letter of the law,
right,
but also the context of the transaction and the party's objective intent.
Exactly.
But beyond the specifics of this case, what broader lessons can we draw?
Good question.
How might this case inform the future of consumer protection and contract law, especially in our increasingly digital world?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think Johnson v. Earnhardt's serves as a cautionary tale.
Okay.
Reminding us that contract law must keep pace with the ever-changing landscape of commerce. The rise of e-commerce digital products and those ubiquitous click-wrap agreements has created a whole new set of challenges.
It's like the Wild West out there in the digital realm.
It is.
With new business models and technologies emerging faster than the law can sometimes keep up.
Exactly. And that's where thoughtful legal analysis and adaptation come into play.
Okay.
We need to ensure that those foundational principles of contract law, fairness, transparency, mutual assent,
right,
are applied effectively in this evolving digital landscape.
So it's not just about rewriting the rule book.
Right.
It's about reinterpreting those existing rules and applying them in a way that makes sense in the context of new technologies and business practices.
Precisely. And I think Johnson v. Earnhardt provides a roadmap for that kind of nuanced legal analysis.
Uh-huh.
The court's willingness to consider parole evidence, the emphasis on objective intent, the recognition that as-is disclaimers aren't always a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Uh-huh.
These are all principles that can guide us as we navigate the complexities of contract law in the digital age.
It seems like courts are becoming more attuned to the potential for unfairness or lack of transparency in online contracts.
I think so.
Especially those lengthy, jargon-filled terms and conditions that most people just click through without reading.
You're right. We're seeing a growing trend towards requiring clearer, more concise language in online contracts.
Okay.
And a push for greater transparency in how those terms are presented to consumers.
So it's about finding that sweet spot, protecting the legitimate interests of businesses,
right,
while also safeguarding consumers from being bound by agreements they don't fully understand.
Exactly. It's a delicate balancing act.
Yeah.
But I think cases like Johnson v. Earnhardt show us that courts are willing to step in and ensure that contracts, whether online or offline, are rooted in fairness and mutual understanding.
So what are some key takeaways for our listeners, whether they're seasoned lawyers or just starting their legal journey? What wisdom can we glean from this deep dive into the world of used cars warranties and the evolving landscape of contract law?
Well, I'd say the biggest lesson is to approach every contract with a critical eye.
Okay.
Whether you're drafting it, reviewing it, or signing it.
Right.
Pay attention to the details, consider the context, and don't be afraid to ask questions or seek clarification.
Don't just skim through those terms and conditions.
Right.
Really dissect them, understand the implications, and make sure you're comfortable with what you're agreeing to.
And on the drafting side,
yeah,
strive for clarity and transparency, avoid ambiguity, use plain language, and make sure the contract accurately reflects the party's intentions.
It's about preventing those legal headaches before they arise, right?
Exactly.
Building a solid foundation for the agreement so everyone's on the same page from the outset.
Exactly. And as technology continues to reshape the world of commerce,
right,
staying informed about the latest developments in contract law is crucial.
Yeah.
The legal landscape is constantly evolving, and it's essential to stay ahead of the curve.
So Johnson v. Earnhardt's a case about a used car sale gone wrong ends up teaching us valuable lessons about the broader principles of contract law and how those principles are being adapted to the digital age.
It does. It just goes to show that sometimes the most unexpected cases can yield the most profound insights.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into Johnson v. Earnhardt's Gilbert Dodge.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us on this fascinating legal journey.
It's been a pleasure exploring this case with you.